First case for argument this morning is Davis against Witzel. Mr. Lewis.
Good morning. My name is Neil Lewis. I represent the plaintiff, Wayne Davis, who is a 9-year veteran of the Indiana State Police. This case focuses on the Indiana State Police's refusal to reappoint him as a state trooper after approximately a 2.5-month absence. Mr. Davis.
Did he go with Homeland Security and then decided to leave that?
Yes, Your Honor. He did. It was not working well for his family arrangement. He had been transferred quite a distance away. Yeah. He did not leave Homeland Security prior to seeking reappointment. The case focuses on the Section J exemption. I'd like to start with our simplest argument first and then get to the argument that is certainly more difficult to make and difficult to analyze, at least for myself. I think that the simplest argument for why this case should be sent back is that it was dismissed on a 12B6 ruling. We pled both subterfuge and that the plan was not bona fide, and there is one exception that other courts have recognized. It hasn't been recognized yet in the Seventh Circuit that I'm aware of, but I believe that it's an argument this court would recognize, which is we believe we should have been able to conduct discovery on the issue of whether or not they were uniformly following this policy. We've argued in our briefs that the policy on its face allows for that kind of discretion, and if the court were to agree with that the policy on its face allows for that discretion, we believe it should be remanded on that basis as well.
So actually, that I think is a partial answer to my primary question, which is what evidence or what approach do you think you need to take to prove subterfuge? What opportunity have you lost by this ruling?
Yeah, really we focus on the subterfuge element as it pertains to the issue of discovery on whether it's a uniform whether it was made pursuant to a bona fide hiring policy.
So in other words, you think if you could show that this policy was capriciously applied, sometimes yes, sometimes
yes.
No, then is there any authority for showing that's the meaning of subterfuge under the law?
I can find it quickly. It's cited in our brief. I believe that it's cited either in our main brief or reply brief, Your Honor, and I think I can find it pretty quickly. The best case on that is the Northern District of New York, 2007. It's a district court case. We acknowledge that there is no appellate authority that we're aware of agreeing with that argument, Your Honor. But the Northern District of New York in Police Benevolent Association, New York State Troopers versus Bennett, 477 F sub 2nd, 534.
I'm confused, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
I didn't see in your brief any argument about the subterfuge component. I thought you were arguing based on the bona fide component.
I agree. We are focused on that. I believe that the arbitrary and capricious would mean that the hiring decision was not made pursuant to a bona fide plan. So, in other words, under the theory that whether they follow it uniformly matters or not, then that matters.
Let me just be sure I'm understanding what's going on. Are you arguing that this plan is invalid as a subterfuge, or are you arguing that it's not bona fide, or are you arguing both?
We focus on the bona fide element, and I believe that the correct analysis on whether or not it's capriciously applied would go to the bona fide element in that it says, was the decision made pursuant to a bona fide hiring and retirement plan?
So you have to think then that it can't be a bona fide plan, even if it's been the plan, as the district court noted, that's been in place since long before the ADEA, if it's really optional for applying it or not applying it.
Yes, I agree with that, Your Honor. That would be my position. I think, though, that honest minds could say it should fall under the subterfuge element, though.
At the 12B6, I mean, have you waived or forfeited subterfuge at this point?
It was pled in our complaint. We pled both bona fide.
It's not a question of your complaint, counsel. The issue I was raising has to do with your briefs.
Yes, Your Honor.
I've looked at your opening brief and your reply brief, and neither one of them argues subterfuge.
I agree with that. I focus on whether or not the decision was made pursuant to a bona fide plan, Judge Easterbrook.
But now I'm confused. So you're arguing the plan is not bona fide.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why is the fact that it's not always applied mean that it would assume you could prove that. Why would that mean the plan is not bona fide?
Yeah. Well, it means that the decision was not made pursuant to a bona fide plan. In other words, they're not really using the plan. They're not really using a bona fide plan to make the decisions. They're making the decisions however they want.
Right.
And they're not referencing the plan.
That might suggest, so I hate to keep rephrasing your argument, but I'm trying to understand what you're arguing. That would suggest the plan is bona fide. There would be no problem applying the plan. But your argument would be that this decision was not actually made under the plan, that their real rules of decision are different from the ones, from the ostensible ones.
Right. Which means the one that they give us is truly a fake rule, which is why I argue it's not, which is why I would put that under the bona fide element.
No. It sounds like you're saying that the plan might be bona fide, but that the decision was not taken pursuant to the plan.
I agree it can be analyzed that like that, Judge Easterbrook.
In which case, the question is, under which ground recognized by the statute would an argument like that be recognized? Is that really, in essence, a subterfuge argument, or is that, as you are now trying to say, simply a different way of saying it's not a bona fide plan in some other sense of the term? It would be a bona fide plan if it were followed, but it's not being followed. Therefore, it's not a plan presented in good faith, to get away from the Latin for a minute.
Judge Wood, I believe, honestly, it could be analyzed with intellectual integrity under either element. I think that, to some extent, bona fide and subterfuge can overlap, and I believe that it's an area of law that has not been well developed. Where are the timing lights? Oh, there they are. I'm sorry. That has not been well developed, so there's not a lot of precedent out there on this. It's a limited area of employees that are affected by the Section J exemption.
So why do you think Congress put that exemption in there to begin with?
We
need to think of that as we apply it.
Absolutely. That gets me to my second, more difficult argument, which is that it's not bona fide because their plan does not rationally relate to public service, to a public safety purpose. And I am well aware of this Court's decisions in both Minch and COPEC. Minch dealt with the subterfuge element, and COPEC dealt with trying to make a BFOQ analysis. We don't argue for a BFOQ analysis, but we do argue for there should at least be a rational relationship test, which the Supreme Court said was too lenient for a BF.
But
yes,
this,
Judge.
This, of course, completely loses me.
Yeah.
There is a rational relationship requirement, but it's a requirement under the Equal Protection Clause, not the ADEA. Why would one read Section 523J2 to duplicate the Equal Protection Clause? You don't seem to have made an equal protection argument.
No, Your Honor. We have not. But I would argue that the statute should be interpreted in light of the public safety purpose, which is stated in the congressional record. It was also in the original enacting legislation that said Human Health and Services and EOC were to develop these alternative testing regs, which would be in place by now, by the way, had they done their work. And we wouldn't have a Section J exemption, which is an interesting issue all by itself. We argue that they should not be given carte blanche on an age restriction in a reappointment policy unless there is at least some facial reason in the text of the reg that could say to the court and the agency, there's a public safety purpose here, but there isn't. Mr. Davis has as much experience, and he's much younger than many active duty officers. And again, we recognize that was brought up in Minch, But Minch was...
That's just an objection to the existence of Section 623J, right? You think states and state and local governments shouldn't be privileged to have special rules for firefighters. But they are. You can't read Section 623J to destroy itself. That's not how we read statutes.
I've struggled with that issue, Your Honor. Absolutely. I believe that, and it's plaintiff's position, that it actually gives Section J more meaning, and it gives it a meaning truer to the congressional intent if we at least say you've got to make some rational relationship showing to public safety and the purpose of your age hiring policy.
Are you talking about testing?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is it shouldn't arbitrarily discriminate between officers that are exactly the same, similarly situated. Again, Mr. Davis has been through the ISP training. He was admitted to the ISP. He served as a trooper for 9 years. I see my time is up, judges, unless you want me to finish that thought.
Certainly finish answering Judge Caney's question.
Thank you, Judge Easterbrook. I look at Mr. Davis and say there are many, many, many troopers who the Indiana State Police has found fit for public safety purposes to serve who are situated exactly as he is, 9 years of experience, and in fact older than he is, with all the same training. It makes no sense under the reemployment policy. It's arbitrary. You cannot find any good reason to keep this man off the force based on public safety, because they've already said everybody else like him is good enough to serve. Thank you, judges.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Mr. Steiner.
May it please the court. We view that the district court correctly decided that based on federal law and this court's decisions in both the Kopech and the Minch cases, that a rule that's been in effect for more than 20 years is a bona fide rule.
Well, the line that was articulated by Mr. Lewis and giving his brief the benefit of the doubt would be that although the policy is bona fide, the decision was not taken pursuant to that policy. If the policy is sometimes applied and sometimes not, how does one know whether the decision is pursuant to the policy?
Right, and if we're talking about I assume that he's talking about some kind of subterfuge there or something
no.
of that nature, or whatever.
Look, I'm talking about the words pursuant to. Mm-hmm. 623J2 lists among the requirements that the decision be, quote, pursuant to, close quote, a bona fide policy that's not a subterfuge. So the decision has to be taken as a result of an application of the policy.
Well, we know.
How do we know whether this decision was taken pursuant to this policy or to some unstated criteria?
Well, we know that in Mr. Davis's case, it was taken pursuant to the policy because he was 42 years old.
No, that's not sufficient. Suppose there are two people who apply, and they're both 42, and one of them is hired and one of them isn't. The guy who isn't hired says this shows that the decisions are being made pursuant to some unstated criteria. And you can't reject that claim just by saying the plaintiff is 42. So how do we reject the claim as I've articulated?
Well, for one thing, there's been no allegation in this case. There was no allegation in the complaint that the state police has ever hired someone or rehired someone over the age of 40.
But that's not quite a fair reading of the complaint. I think what the complaint is asserting is that, indeed, decisions are not being made pursuant to this policy, and that's why the plaintiff wanted to get beyond the 12B6 stage and engage in discovery to find out whether that could be supported. I mean, we aren't at a summary judgment point. If we were at summary judgment and he hadn't come forward with evidence, you'd be perfectly justified in making this argument, but we're not.
Sure, I understand what you're saying, but in this particular complaint, in this particular case, there's no indication whatsoever of any situation where the state police has hired someone who was over the age of 40.
Why is that a fact that needs to be pleaded under Rule 8, in
well,
your opinion?
I think we have, in this case, a person who was with the state police for 8 years, so he has some experience with the department.
No, I'm asking you a more general question. Why do you think the fact about who the Indiana State Police has hired and who it has not hired and at what age is something that needs to be pleaded under Rule 8 for a federal court complaint?
Well, I would think because we have the exemption, very clear exemption in this particular case.
Well, he's alerted you to the fact that he doesn't think you can rely on the exemption here. The issue is joined between you. It's not like you don't know what his complaint is.
Well, he's in a very, very general sense said that.
Judge Wood's question in an even more general way. 623J is an affirmative defense that a particular employer can make.
Sure.
And it's pretty much standard pleading doctrine that complaints need not anticipate or plead around defenses. So why is there any need for the word boo in the complaint about how the plaintiff plans to defeat the 623J defense if one is made?
Well, if one reads this Court's decisions in Kopech and Mensch, it might suggest that you want to say more than what was said in this complaint.
Look, Kopech doesn't have anything to do with the requirements of pleading under Rule 8 of the Rules of Civil Procedure. So if you'd address my question, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I know that we only need notice pleading, but I think you can plead yourself out of court. In this particular case, there was no indication that anyone was hired over 40. More importantly, when the motion to dismiss was filed.
Let me stop for a moment, though. People certainly can plead themselves out of court, but it's usually because they say something like, the following set of events happened 5 years ago, and it's a four-year statute of limitations. So any judge can look at the complaint and say, this is not going anywhere. There's simply no way that this plaintiff can win. You're making a different argument that omitting facts about a possible affirmative defense is another way of pleading yourself out of court, and I haven't seen that.
Well, I would offer this as well. When we filed the motion to dismiss in this case, there was an opportunity for Mr. Davis to tell the district court, this is what I want to do. This is my concern.
Did you make a motion for a more definite statement?
No, not that I am aware of.
Well, look, if the defendant can make a motion for a more definite statement asking the plaintiff to put more in, but if the only thing that happens is a Rule 12b-6 motion, then the only question is whether the complaint is adequate.
And what I would say about that, under Mensch, under Kopech, we said this court explained that a bona fide plan that is one that is genuine and pursuant to which actual hiring decisions are made.
And
we know that at least one
hiring
decision was made relating to this plan.
No, we don't know that. That's exactly the issue he's contesting. He doesn't know whether you threw a dart at the wall and decided not to hire him or whether you were really following this plan. He knows what the answer was, no, but the question is the reason.
Well, it is certainly consistent. I mean, this decision was made in Mr. Davis's case is certainly consistent with the wording of the plan.
Are troopers tested annually, medically?
I'm not aware that they're tested annually or have to pass a physical test annually.
So once they pass it, they're in?
I believe that they are. I think that there have been from time to time, and I can't tell you right now, Judge, exactly what the state of affairs for testing is, but they have had in the past, from time to time, some requirements relating to showing some level of physical fitness after they were already on the department. They have training. They have retraining.
Is there a mandatory retirement age?
Yes, there is. I believe it's 65.
And there are troopers currently employed who are the same age as this plaintiff.
Absolutely, and I would assume many that are much older than Mr. Davis. In this particular case, the department has chosen to use the same requirements for either hiring or rehiring. When a person leaves the department, after all, and wants to be rehired, they're competing for a limited number of positions on the department when they come back. I think that's perfectly fair, rational to apply the same standard to hires or rehires, and that's all this policy does in this particular case. And I would point out that something is said about the fact in the briefing that the hiring requirements are ultimately subject to approval. Not the hiring requirements, but the hiring process or hiring a person is subject to approval of the superintendent and the state police board. That's obviously an additional requirement that a person must pass muster in order to obtain a position on the department. Ultimately, we think that under Kopech and Minch, this court has indicated clearly in the past that if we have a plan in place that was in place at the time the ADA requirement became applicable to the firefighters, police officers, and that the plan has been used, and we have no indication here in the pleadings at all that this plan has not been used. In fact, we know from Mr. Davis's case, it appears that it was utilized in this case, that the exemption applies. I see no reason, and I would urge this court not to require further action in a situation where there's no basis for concluding that.
Was he notified the reason he was not rehired was because he was over 40?
Yes, he was.
Any other reason?
They indicated something about something in the background, I believe, as well. But
the case comes to us, I think it's only this over 40. Quite undeveloped.
That's this
and
case.
And more anticipating affirmative defenses, actually. But
we would urge the court to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our next case for argument this morning.